So, yesterday Chris caught me in the office and asked whether I could talk today. And I said no, because I was planning to prepare my talks and results. And so he said, okay, could someone make it work? Because I'm not sure that it worked. So, no, it just disappeared. Okay, so I need to change the resolution, I think. Some okay, I can talk while there's some. And in this case, Chris told me that I should talk about what I didn't plan to talk. So I assembled a couple of transparencies, and I will show you those. Right. I'll be talking about density fluctuations in MHD turbulence. People who assembled here have different ideas about star formation, which is very good. But nowadays, I think the role of turbulence is more or less accepted. In fact, Enrique was at a meeting 2 years ago about which was devoted to small ionized and neutral structures formation. And at that meeting, I told the audience that numerical simulations changed the paradigm about the role of turbulence. And well, then one of the senior members approached me and said, well, I would not say he or she, that he/she has been talking about that for all his/her life. And I asked a question: what was the percentage of the community which believed you? So, but with pictures, people tend to believe, whether they are wrong or right, it doesn't matter. Right, so density fluctuations are the most easy to observe, as we saw in the previous. They are the most easy obtainable statistic. They are also observable, well, they're observable in terms of the column densities. You see that there is a difference between column densities and the three-dimensional densities. You have more fine structures, more you see more fine filaments. But still, as on this set of pictures, you see that there is a difference between the density structures parallel to magnetic fields and perpendicular to magnetic field. You may distinguish also subsonic case and supersonic case. Well, I'll be talking about only highly magnetized media, assuming that the injection velocity is of the order of Alfvén velocity. So I'll be. Okay, this is you have a parallel or perpendicular direction of magnetic to magnetic field, the picture. So in this case, these are our cubes, and magnetic field is in this direction, and you see that many structures are along magnetic field. I'll show on the next transparency it even more clearly. Right, so these are visualization of the structure formation using textures. So we simultaneously see here not only densities, but also velocities. So densities are given by different colors, but velocities are given by these textures. And again, we have perpendicular to magnetic field and parallel to magnetic field. Structures and what we see is the evolution of those structures. We see interesting phenomena here, namely we see that the highest densities tend to be perpendicular to magnetic field. Intermediate densities tend to have structures parallel to magnetic field. Here, as I said, you have this magnetic field direction, and magnetic field is directed on this slide perpendicular to the screen. These structures are similar to the structures that 80 years ago people were studying using experiments, normal experiments. You probably, well, younger people don't know what are they, but they were sending smoke and they were studying this structure. But then there was a smart guy, Kolmogorov, who came up with quantitizing these relations. And these ideas about Kolmogorov approach very straightforward, so people would say, why other people did not come up with such ideas? Well, they were probably not so trivial. He dealt with incompressible turbulence, and he just said in incompressible turbulence the rho is constant, density is constant, so you have rho VL squared over T cascading, and cascading time, the natural cascading time is the eddy turnover time, is L over VL, and he got in his scalings of VL scales as L to 1/3, which entails the famous Kolmogorov relation. Physically, this means, as all of you know, the idea that energy is cascading from large scale to small scale with low dissipation, which is ensured by large Reynolds numbers of the turbulence, and this the process itself similar to the dissipation scale. Is it possible to generalize this work to something more relevant to star formation, for example, compressible turbulence? And there was some ignored work by Fleck, which suggested such an idea. And the idea of Fleck is that you should have a hierarchy of structures. So you have, in this case, not constant density, but density which depends on the scale. And then you move from one scale then to another scale which gives you some generalization of the laws.
Maybe you'll talk about this more later, but it's very hard to understand what it means to have.
Yeah, it's not easy to understand, and I was among the people who also read this paper and ignored. Actually, that's why? Because, well, we will talk about this a bit later. Otherwise. So, this Fleck prediction somehow are very interesting in terms of point of view of star formation. For velocity, he gets some modification of Kolmogorov relation by some constant alpha, and also he gets something which suggests that density also scales with the size. We know from simulations that as we go to supersonic turbulence, you are getting steeper density, steeper velocity spectrum. So alpha is positive, which means that here you have VL, which scales with some negative, this is an increasing function with a decrease of scale. It's very important for star formation. So potentially, what if you have supersonic turbulence, you expect to have star formation, even without gravity, maybe. Probably not. Okay, in any case.
What does this rho L mean?
Yeah, well, this is the density corresponding to the particular hierarchical structure.
But
so,
how would it be in principle measured?
That's what I'm going to talk. Right, so, and it was ignored till Kritsuk, I think Padua, Norman, and someone else, I forgot, took this very seriously. Yeah. They said, okay, you can create from those two a new quantity, modified velocity, which is rho to one-third and v. And they've shown that you restore Kolmogorov scaling for this quantity. Indeed, if you look at those relations, you would see that this new quantity U would scale as one-third. So we were very interested in that result, and we thought whether for compressible MHD we would have similar relations or very different relation. Again, we are talking about compressible MHD in terms of subalphanic turbulence. So it's different from what Padovan or Oke would tell us about interstellar turbulence. So these are simply illustrations of what we're getting. This is a modified spectrum. Spectrum of this modified quantity norm, which is compensated by this k to the 5/3. So this is compensated spectrum for Kolmogorov turbulence is exactly parallel line, and for our simulations at subsonic turbulence, both velocity, which is dashed line, and this modified velocity have coinciding spectrum over the inertial range, which gives you this zero slope. But when we increase the Mach number, in this case, velocity gets steeper as we expect, but this modified velocity stays the same. The same is, in fact, applicable to the structure functions for different Mach numbers, and you see that this for a range of Mach numbers, our results show that the modified velocity gives the same result. You can kind of go further and construct a more elaborate measure, not spectrum, by high order statistics. And again, you see similar trend that you have the higher number statistics going along this Shilevek predictions. For particular dimensions of equal 2, but velocity does not show any self-similarity. You would say, what the hell, why do I need this higher order statistics? It's useless, but it's wrong. For example, this is one of my illustrations why this highest order statistics are very useful, and it's related to the Folgeron's work, where a lot of chemical reactions are suggested to be produced within vortices, very concentrated vortices due to the intermittency. I mentioned that in Kolmogorov turbulence, intermittency is not considered. It's essentially no intermittency turbulence. But what we did with my student Berezniak, we calculated the energy deposition within vortices for different dimensions of the dissipation structure, and these are our Reynolds numbers. because everything depends on these Reynolds numbers, and these are Reynolds numbers that you guys, numerists will never get in with your computers. So, but the outcome of this calculation is that if we know this higher order scaling, we can answer this question, and if we believe that there is Shilly-Weck scaling for some dimensions, one or two, it shows that you cannot produce a lot of the chemical reactions in the vortices. All right. So in some sense, what we are saying, well, we do not understand why this flex model works, first of all. But there is there are interesting things that surface up, is that we have different beasts inhabiting turbulence, supersonic turbulence. So what we did again with my student and my collaborator is we considered the scaling of logarithm of density, which cuts out the peaks of densities. And what we found is that while density gets you shallow and shallow spectrum, the log density gives you Kolmogorov spectrum, and also you store Goldegg-Schiedha scaling for parallel and perpendicular direction. These mice know about magnetic fields and behave in a regular way. At the same time, we can consider the density peaks. And here, the density peaks are defined at a different percentage of rho max. And you see this rising spectra. You can take this rho max, maximum density, and take a contours, for example, a 10% rho max. Consider only these islands. And the smaller the islands, the higher the density, what this plot shows. And this is our alpha parameter in the FLEC model versus Mach number. And these are data obtained through this density peaks, and those obtained through the velocity. There is a tendency. We are not getting exact correspondence between alpha obtained by two methods, but these are consistent. So this plot is a famous plot by Armstrong, Rick, and Spangler. We also use with Chepurnov and our collaborators on VAM, the VAM data, and you see we get very nice correspondence for the density fluctuations. But this does not answer the questions why we may have small ionized or neutral density fluctuations. One of the possibilities is that these are elephants in the supersonic turbulence. Another possibility that we may think of is that these are density fluctuations or density filaments which are naturally produced in partially ionized gas. We predicted this regime of turbulence in our paper with Vishniak and Chua, and high density contrasts observed can be explained in that model that your turbulence goes to some substantially large fraction of parsec scale, which is determined by the ambipolar diffusion, but the thickness of these filaments scales as the inverse Reynolds number. Magnetic Reynolds number, which can be a factor of 10 to the 12 or larger. Yes. And that's here you can produce this magnetic field reversals, and in between of them you produce density. And this is the last thing that I wanted to show you. This is the evolution of these structures, and a note of caution that if you do not know what you're looking for, you may miss those structures because these resistive scales for this regime of turbulence in a different way compared to the ordinary type of turbulence. So this, I think, opens the floor for a discussion what these density structures could mean, and whether we can observe them and study numerically.
Somehow I missed actually what you measured for alpha now.
Well, let me see.
Just sort of the value, like, because sort of one would sort of seem like a constant mass.
Yeah, so this is this alpha value depends on the mass sonic Mach number, and you see it changes as we here on this plot we show this alpha for obtained with the spectra structure function. They differ a bit because of this numerical effects and some statistics effect. They measure substantially more when we measure them with the density peaks, but there is, I would claim, a correspondence in a trend. I believe Kritsuk, Padovan, Norland, not Norland, Norman, measure got better correspondence between for hydrodynamic turbulence, but I don't remember. Paula, what's your? You obtain better correspondence. Okay, we did.
So, if these small ionized neutral structures are the sort of the extreme end of your fluctuation spectrum in a turbulent medium, that's sort of what you're proposing. Is there some spectroscopic signature that associated with the velocity field of these structures that could be looked for?
Well, there is, in general, anti-correlations between this velocity density peaks and this blobs. You know, we predict, so it's a difficult question, I say. You see, we can predict the difference between this mechanism and the other mechanism, but oh well, there could be other mechanisms, I don't know. So we were talking about distinguishing the two, thinking about this, but we...
Yeah, you know, going back, I think, to what Eve was asking in the middle of the talk, I don't know exactly what the scaling for rho means, because really the density is a multifractal in turbulence, which means that it has different scalings over different sets of or subsets of space.
Yeah.
So would that be like sort of average scaling, or what?
Well, I hate this multifractal. In some sense, it's you know, it's the same. Well, that's a good question, actually. Okay, I don't know which I should try to answer. Well, the Fourier transforms in terms of the spectrum are good when you don't have correlations in K-space. This is well known in cosmology, for example. So when you have very isolated structures, it may be misleading, I would claim.
You've shown that if you take out the high density regions that would correspond to shocks or whatever,
I recover Kolmogorov.
Right, the remainder. Yep. So you could think of just subtracting out that you filter out the high peaks.
Yeah.
Then what does
So, well, I wish I knew a better answer to your question. Well, I can answer in the way which does not satisfy me, but I can still try to answer. So, somehow, my understanding is that we have these blobs, which constitute in terms of mass, not more than 10% of your mass. But nevertheless, this hierarchy of these concentrated blobs and structures is extremely important for the overall dynamics. And we see near these blobs concentrated shocks. And we study this evolution of these blobs.
But here, just a purely technical
question.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Your rho L. So when you look at the power spectrum of rho.
Power spectrum would not give you this rising spectrum. Power spectrum gives you, and this was actually why I did not believe the flex model. I read this book maybe in 99 and said, forget about this. Because you are not getting a rising spectrum here. You at maximum get something flat. Actually, Padoan was the first, I think, who mentioned this in his paper.
How is rho L defined?
Rho L is defined as those peaks. First, you take these peaks at, for example, 10% of rho max. So you take your map. You isolate these islands and 10% rho max. And you forget about everything else.
And then what do you do with it?
And then you study how this, when you, decrease.
So what does it, you make this math?
Yes.
Some fraction of romance.
Yes, yes. And so I'm asking a question, what's happening as I'm going to smaller and smaller dimensions within this romance? I'm sorry, I misunderstood what you are saying. I'm saying that here Fourier transform, it does not give you this. Because mice are pretty numerous. But when you start studying blobs, they give you completely different picture.
But you're still taking a power spectrum of a filter field, right?
Yeah.
The same thing. But in general, I don't see why there's a problem with raw sub L. Because, I mean, you can talk about scaling of any quantity. It could be Vx, Vy, Z, raw.
No, but you see, the Padoan, I tell you what is my problem with that. I have problems with that. And, I would naively think that rho L should be indeed related to the total, not only on these islands which correspond to the small fraction of them, total mass, but the total mass. But somehow it's happening that these blobs, this is my interpretation, dominate the dynamics.
Amount of importance for the fact that you need to filter the density in order to get some kind of Kolmogorov, which at that resolution is not even clear is Kolmogorov, but I don't attach too much importance to that.
No, but I attach too much, okay, you don't attach too much importance to that, but I attach to a lot of importance to that overall spectrum.
What's wrong with the far spectrum of density?
Well, because it does not give you this, if you calculate alpha for using that, you will have something going
there. Okay, then it's flex model that bother you, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
A flex model may be meaningless, but it's not meaningless to ask the question, what is the statistical scaling of the density field? And what we show in our paper essentially is that what you find essentially, the fact that you recover Kolmogorov scaling for rho 1 to the 1 third times v instead of for velocity alone, simply means that when you're thinking about an energy cascade, you have to account for rho if there are density.
No, but this is, no, I disagree. Yeah, you, what, you see, what, okay, previous. Okay, this is the flex model. And I don't understand if you just, you can say, I empirically found that this is a good quantity.
No.
This is also maybe...
different. The question is, you know from the start that you cannot have, if you're talking of an energy cascade, you have to, the density must play a role because of the cascade of energy.
Yes, and you put this value here, right? So you agree with that, but this is the essentially what Flegg was saying. And why I did not pay much attention on this model initially was because I was saying, I know that this value may be at most, constant. It's not rising. It may be flat. But we know that this value is getting, for the supersonic turbulence, steeper than Kolmogorov prediction. How could it be? How could this inclusion of rho compensate this problem with steepening VL? But it's happening that this small fraction of these density peaks somehow mysteriously for me influences the cascade.
I would like to add that in my mind, the problem is that there is not a single rho L attached to each VL.
But what we are showing is that it's more or less self-similar. Okay, but this is that's what I would agree. Educated guess. I would also say, well, they can be very different. We know about that. But no, there is some intrinsic self-similarity, which is very interesting and I believe fundamental. We don't understand this. So this is, as I said, I would not give this as a prepared my talk. But this is to steer up the discussion mostly. And I hope Padoan Paolo has more.
So, I mean, I had a simple question. I mean, some of the turbulence models you can do, you drive with the velocity. Is that right?
Yeah.
So you have a driven velocity.
Yeah. It's 1/4 of the box.
I sort of worry about this a little bit because now you're actually studying rho v squared at the beginning.
Yeah.
I often feel like when you do this, it's like, you're blowing a wind at something, and the grass and the skyscrapers move at the same speed.
I agree with you. I agree with you only for this part. And this part, I say, this is not inertial range. There's the whole idea of self-similarity in turbulence, that there is inertial range where things are self-similar. And, things are self-similar over this range for subsonic turbulence, and it corresponds to the Kolmogorov. Here we have a new range of self-similarity for this modified velocity.
Yeah. All I'm saying is it might be interesting to actually try the other drivers again, because of that analysis.
What, magnetic field?
You're talking about the fact that the little clumps are going shooting. But maybe that doesn't matter because they're supposed to be attached to the velocity differences across those scales. And so even if they're moving really fast, what you're accounting for it there is the velocity difference.
But there's so many things with the analogies of the ramp pressure scripting that they get.
I'm saying for that accounting that you do when you do the energy spectrum, the velocity that you attach to them is the velocity difference across the size, not the bulk velocity.
But also their scale evolution, if they all end up moving slower and slower over the course of time.
Well, I don't see really, maybe it's my problem, I don't see a really fundamental difference between the interstellar driving and the driving in the box in terms of the influence of on the inertial range.
I mean, but since you're analyzing, you know, the energy now, it's like the energy injection is much higher on these dense cones if you just drive the velocity. So you need that, so, you
know, so but how would you drive the turbulence in this case?
I mean, you know, so one thing, you know, that Newton might like more, it would be for the force rather than velocity, because,
or astrophysically, a bunch of explosions, for instance.
Well, it's difficult. You see, you would end up with.
Yeah. You just do the force, you know.
Yeah.
The Fourier mode.
No, no. We drive in Fourier space.
Right. The velocity.
Yeah.
And so if I'm a skyscraper or a little.
Well, we did not do all this for this particular simulations. We've done different driving for velocity. Okay. Yeah, I agree. There are, for me, the most interesting is what does it mean? Yeah, it's one of the ways to approach maybe. If we see the differences, then we'll be.
I would just like to agree completely that the question of what does it mean is really important because for example, I wrote to Alexei asking him about whether the scaling that predicted by the Fleck model is consistent with the energy spectrum slope, and I understand that he told me no. So in other words, the scaling predicted by Fleck's model is not really consistent with the scaling that you would get from the power spectrum of the tensor.
I don't understand this because
if you take the density power spectrum.
Yeah, and I think okay.
And you try to obtain a sort of structure function for the density.
Yeah, essentially you will recover different alpha.
It
will be
inconsistent.
No.
I don't
understand. I think this plot shows that we are consistent. This is I think that in Kritsuk et al. Paper, Padwan knows better than me, it's even better correspondence between this.
I don't remember precisely his question. I don't remember if in the paper actually we were.
I remember that you also got and you also gotten it even better than we.
I don't think we work out what would that be the alpha if you just consider the power spectrum of density alone, and then would that be consistent?
No, you did this.
Huh?
You, there is even a paper. No, there is a paper in even a comparison with observations. Maybe I'm missing. I'm not going to argue that you did this if you say no.
My question is that Fleck model doesn't work too well, but there is, you said something interesting and
it's really cool. Yeah. In this case, we're different on that. I think Fleck model works amazingly well. We don't understand why it works. So there is a difference. And there is no magnetic field, by the way, in the Fleck's model at all.
There's no intermittency, that's not a problem. So you can't even consider higher order.
Changing density with scale, doesn't that imply intermittency?
No, it's just the scaling.
So essentially, it seems like what you're doing is you're just taking the power spectrum within a dense clump, because there are massive dense clumps, and you're looking at the density power spectrum within it. is that correct in terms of interpreting that lower part?
Well,
so if you filter and you just take the 10%, that means you're looking at the dense clumps. And
you're we're taking the dense clump. We are, you see, well, it's a bit more. Well, it's more technical. I can discuss it with later. I can show what we are doing in the paper.
Yeah,
because if you talk, if you just filter these clumps and then you take Fourier transform, it will be mostly dominated by the boundaries. There is some we're looking within the boundaries. Then application of this. Fourier within not rectangular domain has.
Effectively, you're basically looking at the power spectrum.
Yeah, you may say so. You may say so. I would say that what we are doing essentially is we are calculating the mass at a different threshold. I would say.
Within a
club, yeah. So at a different threshold. So.
Okay, maybe we should thank Alex again. So I think this was definitely very good on the discussion.